You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 5. This minute begins with the engineer's death and ends with the title of the film. On the Alien by Minute podcast, the host mentioned how Alien breaks down into nice minute-long scenes. They theorize that this is something to do with Ridley's background in commercials. While we're not too far into Prometheus at this point, I am starting to pick up on that structure. Of course, there are many scenes that are longer than 1 minute, but each minute is almost self-contained in a way. It's sort of set-up, payoff, set-up, payoff. You'll see that a little bit more in the next minute, I believe. I'll bring that up again. The engineer is very calm. He shows no fear or regret or panic. He watches only with curiosity as he succumbs to the effects of the mutagen. Emotions are not universal, even amongst humans. It is conceivable that these aliens don't share our concept of emotions as well. He screams in pain, but that's about the extent of it. And really, the only emotion we have witnessed from these beings is anger. I praise the practical effects, but the digital effects are great too. The way in which the mutagen spreads through his veins is so real. They really paid close attention to how veins work, and as we go under his skin, the animation continues to be just as detailed. We've seen a lot of cheesy DNA animated sequences in movies, and I'm not just talking about Jurassic Park.
A DNA strand, like me, is a blueprint for building a living thing.
Most Spider-Man or X-Men films have a cartoonish DNA sequence, but most of them make DNA look digital. Here it at least looks organic. That said, the traditional DNA double helix image you have in mind actually doesn't exist in photographs the way you think it does. In fact, most images you see are artistic representations. It was only months after Prometheus came out that the first image of DNA captured under an electron microscope was released. These photos don't look like much of anything. You would have to be a scientist to make sense of it. As Megan Garber of The Atlantic explains, of course that rendering takes artistic license. Watson and Crick, who were the first to determine DNA structure, did so on a combination of sophisticated guesswork and, crucially, X-ray crystallography. And that remains a workable and powerful technique for visualizing DNA strands. But crystallography creates its own kind of rendering. It's a technology whose imaging power relies on diffracted light. When we look at those now iconic images of the double helix, the fuzzy X inside the fuzzy O, we're not seeing the DNA itself so much as we're seeing X-rays deflected from its atoms. A link to the article will be in the show notes on traviandesigns.com. So basically, DNA is so tiny that even today we don't have a crystal clear photo of it. Curiously, the engineer doesn't bleed at all. His skin is disintegrating, and yet it's all very clean. When we see the DNA, the surrounding color is a kind of teal. Color, of course, doesn't work the same on that scale, but when the deacon is born, the blood from the other engineer is practically black. So I guess that's proof they don't have iron-based blood. Perhaps copper-based blood, like Vulcans? There is a significant tradition of human sacrifice across the Mesoamerican cultures, notably the aforementioned Aztecs. The purpose was to appease the gods, to ensure good weather and good harvests, among other things. I have to wonder if perhaps the engineers worshipped another god, that the process of self-sacrifice to seed life on other planets was to appease their idol. As I've said, while they are clearly a technologically advanced race, they're also very ritualistic. This scene is steeped in ritual. These are not scientists, they have more in common with monks. They don't seem to be creating life for any particular reason. They had, for all intents and purposes, abandoned us. Humans are not being harvested, like in Jupiter Ascending, nor are they servants or slaves or test subjects. Their purpose is completely unknown to us. I choose to ignore Ridley's comment suggesting that Jesus was an engineer and they abandoned us because we crucified him. I think that diminishes the scope of the story of Prometheus. It's high school level theology. The idea that the gods are mad at us is too juvenile. I am of the philosophy that author's intent is not always the ultimate authority. Look at Scott's other work. He swears Deckard is a replicant, and if that diminishes your enjoyment of the film, you are just as valid in believing he's human. Again, I refer back to the warring factions of engineers theory. I think there are alien politics at play here that are too complicated for us to grasp. Maybe they had a plan for us, but things changed, and by the end of this film, the humans reawakened an ancient war. While there isn't much to confirm this, I like the idea that engineers are actually inferior in some way to humans. It continues the theme of creation surpassing the creator. If synthetics are superior to humans, shouldn't it follow that humans are superior to engineers? The technology is seemingly organic. Might this imply that a certain degree of their achievements are the result of nature? What's most striking is that this engineer is clearly doing this voluntarily. Unlike Aztec sacrifices, he is seemingly stone-cold sober, and no one is forcing him to do it. This may also be indicative of how engineers, as a species, view their worth as individuals. This ties into what I was saying about the lack of individuality in appearance. I really do think these engineers are even more alien than they appear on the surface. As I briefly touched upon in an earlier episode, the engineers tie into a lot of common tropes in mythology, ufology, and conspiracy theories. Angels, the Anunnaki, tall whites, the Nordic aliens from Pleiades are all creatures who are variously described as larger than humans with white skin. They may have hair or different eye colors, but essentially giant white humanoids are a recurring trend. I will not waste our time going into detail about any of these aliens because, frankly, it's completely insane and the opposite of information. Panspermia, however, is not a completely ridiculous theory. It's the idea that life can be seeded on other planets through various means, namely microorganisms hitching a ride on a meteor and landing on another planet. Deliberate panspermia, that is, aliens seeding life on other planets, is pretty common in science fiction. Notably, and this is what came to mind first, the episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where it's revealed that the reason why all the aliens, the humans, Vulcans, Klingons, and so on, look vaguely similar is that they all share a common ancestor. Stargate also relies on this trope a lot. It explains why they can find a dozen planets that look exactly like medieval Earth. Unlike Star Trek and Stargate, where you get the sense that these humanoid aliens are common for the sake of budget, here the aliens could look like literally anything, but they have very deliberately chosen this design. That's something I find quite common in Ridley's work, deliberateness. Nothing is an accident. He focuses on every little detail. Watch any behind-the-scenes documentaries, and you can see how involved he likes to get with all departments. This statuesque parody of the human form is so semiotically evocative. It's evocative of our myths, our art, our religions, our fears and hopes about our place in the universe. It's astounding that we are only 4 minutes into this film and it's setting up these monumental existential questions. The enormity of this opening is breathtaking. A common criticism is that this opening was almost too good. It sets up so much that isn't paid off by the end of the film. And true, everyone knows this film ends up without any concrete resolutions, but what my argument presupposes is that maybe it never set out to do that? It'll become more apparent as we get further into this analysis, but I believe that watching Prometheus should feel like wandering through the ruins of an ancient city. It should be a numinous experience, something beautiful and terrifying, like you're getting a glimpse of a world you can never know. Every new detail you discover only leads to more questions. That's what Prometheus means to me. It's the same feeling I get when I read about unsolved mysteries or lost cultures or anything like that. We end this minute as the title of the film slowly reveals itself, much the same way it did in Alien and in Covenant. It's so iconic. I also love the light, optimistic music that plays at the end under the title. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TravianDesigns.com, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook.